Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday,
1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time,
and you're listening to you with your host, Venger Satanis, and the Beast.
Thanks for tuning in to the U's this Saturday. My name's T.C. Downey, and this is my co-host, Venger. Venger, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Hopped up on goofballs, as usual.
Excellent. Today's actually hopefully going to be a rather busy show, so let's get everybody this phone number to start off with. You guys can call in at 347-989-1371. If you've got questions in regard to today's subject or you just want to input your thoughts, it's definitely the day to do it. Before we get started, though, we had a question about our last week's show that it surfaced on the Cult of Cthulhu's official forum. I'm going to go ahead and read this, Venger, and then you could take a stab at answering it if you'd like.
Yeah, sure.
All right. This is from Frisk, who's a guest on this forum. He said, I listened to the Ooze this evening. It was a profound episode. I put on a mask and fronts myself. I am a legion of eyes. What I can say, I'm probably the most fucked up guy you could ever meet socially, posing as a functioning member of society. I don't lose much sleep over it, so how does one stay true to a pure purpose here without exposing some flaw or weakness? I mean, we can't stroke ourselves all day long with positive reinforcement, but no one here is perfect. And for that matter, what can anyone here talk about in the paranormal sense on this website or online at all with any real credibility? So how could I even benefit from being an active member? How could I even really contribute?
Right. Well, from personal experience, you know that that stroking yourself all day long is quite an endeavor and not to be taken lightly. And there's chafing, you know, issues that come along with that, no matter how much lube you use. So.
Absolutely. I mean, you can only rub something so much before it's raw.
Exactly. Go ahead.
Serious note? No, please.
Are you there, man?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm still getting used to this new phone, so everybody will have to kind of bear with me on this.
Okay. So, he brought up a couple of different things. I guess he was starting off with our show about masks and the masks that people wear. It's normal for people not to show or even be their true selves. But I think it's important, as we went over a couple of weeks ago, for people to do that, people to uncover their true self and be that person and recognize that we all wear masks and we all are different eyes at different times. And you've got to create a magnetic center. And that's part of the problem that people, you know, they don't have a center point. They don't have a big focus or, you know, a point of entry or point of...
There's no beginning?
Right. Yeah, exactly. You need a starting place. You can't just start running. You've got to
crawl.
Walk before you crawl. Or you crawl before you walk, exactly, and then walk before you run. Easy to a point of entry. You need something inside yourself that's willing to do the work, and that's the magnetic center. That's a collection of eyes that recognizes each other as separate and individual selves, but they have a common goal. They want to work on themselves, and they want to progress and understand and change. And that magnetic center can lead to lots of other change down the road. That's the starting point. So,
I think one of the most important things to keep in mind is that as you go through these different masks that you wear, and inherently you will ultimately change the core or the starting point just through the process of wearing these masks.
Right.
One of his other questions in here, I believe the very next one that was posed, is how does a person stay pure, stay true to a pure purpose without exposing some flaw or weakness? And you and I had actually had a conversation somewhat similar grounds where I talked about the fact that I've taken all of the skeletons that are in the closet and the things that people can use as weapons against me, and I've placed them outside of me, and I've put them, where everybody can see them, and they're exposed, and this way they become weathered and toughened.
Right. Yep. I definitely remember that conversation that we had. I agree, and I for better or worse, I put all my weaknesses out there and admit to them, and I don't pretend to be perfect or a role model for people to look up to, like, 100% of the time. I have flaws, I have weaknesses, and, I admit them, I move on. A lot of them I try to work on. Some I just recognize are just part of my personality, and, I try to live with them and have other people try to accept them. And I don't lie to myself by saying that I'm awesome all the time or I'm perfect all the time. I don't have any flaws or any weaknesses, made of iron or something. That's not true. And admitting that whole mindset is bullshit is initial step to being who you are, I think. And I think that's kind of a satanic thing, too, or that's very popular in the satanic community. Maybe you can give your take on this, Beast, and that is, people have these gigantic ego shields or something, and they think that they can do no wrong, or that they have to build themselves up and be super tough and always hyper intelligent and Johnny on the spot with like the right answer and the right put down, and they don't admit to any flaws or weaknesses.
All right. My actual input on that is it's bullshit.
Right.
I think that inherently what's happening as you build this huge ego shield, as you referred to it, you're taking away the credibility and the actual value of those flaws and weaknesses that you have. Instead of embracing them and understanding them and learning through them, these natural downtrends are inherently considered to be exactly that, a downtrend, where I myself use them as a tool of construction.
Right.
You've got two choices with the sledgehammer. You can hit the wall and hurt your hands, or you can hit the wall and break through it. It just depends on the type of finesse that you're willing to use on the handle of that sledgehammer.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you can't obsess about the things you don't have, but you can't ignore them either.
Certainly not. You need to, you look at them and you figure out why it is that way. And I think that actually you know, that falls into Gurdjieff's actual philosophies of using introspect as a tool to gain higher consciousness.
Right. You can't become conscious if you don't first recognize that you are asleep.
So moving on now to the last little set of questions that this gentleman posed. He states that nobody can really talk about the paranormal on the internet or online at all without it being credible. And then he asks how he can really benefit from being an active member, or how could he really contribute. And I'd like to kind of try to answer these backwards. The contribution happens because you have a different set of eyes looking at the same subject matter, and therefore you're gaining a new perspective. So it's necessary for people to interact and to come forth. And as stupid as you think your thoughts may be on it, you may very well shine the lone candle in the darkness on a concept that maybe seems archaic.
Right.
I also think if people actually want to take part in something, the benefit of it is that you're not only getting the perspective of yourself as you're reading through these materials and working with these different paradigms, but you're also gaining the perspective of everybody else, and in that aspect, that their contributions will help you grow.
Right.
And in turn, your contribution will help them grow.
Yeah, I agree. And I know with the Cthulhu cult, every member is potentially invaluable. And I think it takes everyone, and it takes every bit of energy and work to make something positive in the world and change things for the better. If people put in half as much time and energy into work on themselves and bettering the organization as a whole as they do, some really trivial fluff activity in their life that it's not that important to them, then they could make it a substantial contribution. But as it is, you get out what you put in. If you don't put a lot in, then obviously you're not going to get a lot out. I mean, that's just the way the world works. That's just one of the laws.
Right. Which I guess in some odd way ties into the very last answer, the very last question here, and that is how can anybody talk about things on the internet in the paranormal sense and have real credibility? I think that, you choose what you want to believe and what you don't.
Yeah.
There are religions that have been around for, thousands of years. And there are people that have, they've put their heart and soul into it without knowing whether or not it's fiction or fact. And, they gain something from that.
Right.
So I guess ultimately, who gives a fuck if anybody else wants to listen to you or believe what you have to say? I personally would rather be the raving lunatic on the street corner and have a sense of enlightenment than just another sheep in the herd, scared to have my own thoughts.
Right. That kind of reminds me of very deep and profound philosophy I got from the movie that girl and I were watching last night. I don't know if you've seen the movie. It's called Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Okay, it's a popular movie, so I don't really expect everyone from the left-hand path crowd or the listeners of the ears to immediately be like, oh yeah, I've seen that movie 5 times. I think it's really funny. But anyway, this guy was talking, and he says, sometimes when life gives you lemons, you just gotta say, fuck the lemons, and just bail. I think that's important. It's important to recognize.
Right.
But anyway, we should probably...
What I'd actually like to do, let's go to commercial, and when we come back, we'll tackle the core subject.
Okay. Why don't you give the listeners our phone number again?
All right. It's
break.
It's 347-989-1371, and we'll be right back.
The Ooze is brought to you by the following. CultofCthulhu.net. Awaken with the Cult of Cthulhu. CreativeOddityStudios.com. Making art a dirty word since 1998. Lulu.com/Satanus. Purchase publishings by Avenger Satanus. Artist, author, cult visionary. Find titles such as Cthulhu Cult, Libre AO, and the role-playing game Empire of Satanus. Lulu.com/CreativeOddities. Find publishings written by Jason Sorrell, artist, author, such as The Tattoo Apprentice, The Baphomet Codex, and The Devil's Due. FearTheBeast.com. Let the madness begin. Catch the Dollies. A Vigilant, a Vision. YouTube.com/iPriestSatanus. Now back to our program.
Yeah. All right, welcome back. Before we really get into this, Venger, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to read just a short paragraph, and I think it'll serve as a nice introduction into what we're doing. So
that's funny, because I was going to say the exact same thing. But yeah, you go first. It'd be even more funny if we were actually thinking about reading the same exact passage. But no, you go. And,
okay.
And I'll respond, right. And who knows what will happen.
All right. Untold eons ago, ancient things from beyond the known universe stalked our world. These were the loathsome devil gods from another dimension, a place where the inky depths of space glittered like the freshly gutted entrails. A crimson gore strewn across the croaks and wails of hideous destiny. Such blasphemous fiends were deathless in the pursuit of glory and indulgence. All whom they encountered bowed before the ferocious might of the Old Ones. Everything disruptive to their quest for carnal, black wisdom was annihilated. The ultimate prize was true understanding, knowledge of the forbidden. That was, you recognize that.
I did. Did I write that?
You wrote that.
Okay. After a while, I was like, that... I couldn't tell if I wrote that or Lovecraft wrote that, so I guess I did a good job because I fooled myself, kind of.
Excellent. You wrote that. That's actually, I believe the, let me go back in here and look. Yeah, it's the opening paragraph in your first book, Cthulhu Cult.
Okay. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that has a fair amount of resonance to it, and, you know, I hope people respond to it, and I hope when people read it, you know, it triggers something, or it lets their imagination sort of take them away.
Right. You can go ahead and read what you'd like to read, sir.
Okay. This is kind of a longer passage from the Dunwich Horror. So it's concerning Yog-Sothoth, of course. That's today's topic. Okay. Nor is it to be thought, ran the text as Armitage mentally translated it, that man is either the oldest or the last of Earth's masters, or that the common bulk of life and substance walks alone. The old ones were, the old ones are, and the old ones shall be. Not in the spaces we know, but between them. They walk serene and primal, undimensioned and to us unseen. Yog-Sothoth knows the gate. Yog-Sothoth is the gate. Yog-Sothoth is the key and guardian of the gate. Past, present, future, all are one in Yog-Sothoth. He knows where the old ones broke through of old, and where they shall break through again. He knows where they have trod earth's fields and where they still tread them, and why no one can behold them as they tread. By their smell can men sometimes know them near, but of their semblance can no man know, saving only in the features those they have begotten on mankind. And of those are there many sorts, differing in likeness from man's truest eidolon to that shape without sight or substance, which is them. They walk unseen and foul in the lonely places where the words have been spoken and the lights howl through at their season. The wind givers with their voices, and the earth mutters with their consciousness. They bend the forest and crush the city, yet may not forest or city behold the hand that smites. Kadath in the cold waste hath known them. And what man knows Kadath, ice desert of the south, and the sunken isles of ocean hold stones whereupon their seal is engraven? But who hath seen the deep frozen city, or the sealed tower long garlanded with seaweed and barnacles? Great Cthulhu is their cousin, yet can he spy them only dimly. Ea shav niggurath, as a foulness shall ye know them. Their hand is at your throats, yet ye see them not, and their habitation is even one with their guided threshold. Yog-Sothoth is the key to the gate, whereby the spears meet. Man rules now where they ruled once. They shall soon rule where man rules now. After summer is winter, and after winter summer. They wait patient and potent, for here shall they reign again.
Awesome. So we had the same thought in mind when we were picking out our paragraphs to open with.
Pretty much. Yeah, kind of along the same lines.
I looked at that paragraph and I thought about reading it. And then I realized that you had written something that was much better in trying to introduce how this, you know, I guess it's going to be like a series of looks into the old ones.
Right.
Yog-Sothoth, I'm still trying to get to where I can say that word right. And I'm actually also kind of outside of my element. I normally do this from work, but as you could hear, that was my toddler in the background. I'm at home today. I didn't have a sitter, and so I took the day off of work. But, of course, I'm dedicated to this show, so here I am. Yog-Sothoth, apparently, from what I've read throughout all these Cthulhu stories, he's a very, very key character.
Yeah, literally and figuratively, he's very key.
Right. He is described as being a mass of great glowing orbs or orbs that actually they're busting as they flow backwards into this black flesh, protoplasmic type flesh, and I guess it's finished off with tentacles at the back.
Yeah.
I've not actually seen a lot of visual interpretations of Yog-Sothoth.
I've seen various pictures, you know, in different books and on the internet, and there's always an otherworldly kind of look to Yog-Sothoth. And I think that's important because you can't really anthropomorphize an old one like Yog-Sothoth and get the true nature of that god cross. You pretty much have to go with something that's totally outside the realm of human experience, because, you know, the old ones are just, you know, they're gods in the true sense of the form. They're beyond the ken of mankind and beyond his understanding, and they're just, you know, outside.
Right. In preparing for the show, we thought that it would be might be beneficial to try to develop some method to actually examining each one of these old ones, and we really didn't come to a solid conclusion as to what the right process would be. But one of the things that I thought would be important is perhaps to try to parallel them with, gods from other mythos. Whether it be physical attributes or more metaphysical attributes.
Yeah.
And in my search, this is the one god from this mythos that I'm not finding much that parallels with him. Now, you had stated that you had a couple ideas that you might be able to tie him to other gods and other mythos, and I thought it would be interesting to hear what those were.
Well, I think other people try to do that, and to some degree it's a good idea because, anything you can compare and contrast with something else that's more familiar, you can get a better handle on what you're talking about, its properties and its qualities, things like that. But then again, with something like Yog-Sothoth, or any of the old ones, I almost think it's better to take them on their own. You can compare, one of the ancient ones with, a certain color or a certain element or, anything, like a certain other god from mythology or texture or smell or brand of incense or planet. But I think that only takes you so far. I think you pretty much have to take them on their own merits and not compare them that much with what is familiar. Because in essence, they're supposed to be unfamiliar. They're supposed to be alien and outside our understanding from, a different dimension or different universe that we're totally unfamiliar with. But from reading Lovecraft's works, I think we can get a sense that Yog-Sothoth is a way to manifest whatever reality you're going for. It's a vehicle to get to a certain place. Where Cthulhu is more direct and more like the initial will or the intent, more the powerhouse and the energy that drives the magician's will to manifest whatever reality he wants. I think Yog-Sothoth is means. I think he's the vehicle of getting to that destination. I think he's, the way and the key and the gate. And definitely in this scenario, it takes two to tango. I think you can draw certain things from Cthulhu, like what a magician wants, or what someone in the Cthulhu cult, or someone who's trying to awaken from this false reality, their raw desire to do that, and the ideas they have, what they want, goals. But to actually accomplish those goals, you need a different medium, and I think that's where Yog-Sothoth comes in.
So, in the correct perspective, if I was an artist, Cthulhu would be the pencil, and Yog-Sothoth would be the paper in which I intend to draw upon.
Yes, that's a very good analogy or metaphor, yeah.
One of the things that I found fascinating, because I managed to read three or four of Lovecraft's stories, all with Yog-Sothoth actually being a character within the story. And what I actually noticed was there's more of a balancing dynamic with Yog-Sothoth than there is with some of the other elder gods, and meaning that he's not always out for the destruction of the world.
Right.
As you know from the Silver Key.
Right. Yeah, he's sort of a facilitator for the dreamer. And right, in the more traditional stories like the Dunwich Horror, Yog-Sothoth is not only a force of destruction, but fear and things of that nature, but in the Silver Key and through the gates of the Silver Key, Yog-Sothoth is you know, someone that will show the dreamer the truth and will help guide the dreamer to his real destiny. And so, yeah, he definitely goes from a malevolent character to a more benevolent sort of state. And but you know, those inconsistencies and those digressions are all a part of Lovecraft's mythos. You can't ever really get a full handle on exactly what something is, because it's very nebulous and it's very interchangeable and constantly evolving, and it's very interpretive. I think that's one of the strengths of the mythos.
What I was actually kind of leaning towards when I started with that was the physical description of Yog-Sothoth. And what I just stated, I believe those two actually run hand in hand, and the physical description, therefore, is very good at it's very good at actually giving you an understanding of the being, because it's not a whole entity, but rather a consistent and constantly changing entity that's moving, and even when it's sitting still, it's still moving and progressing.
Right. Yeah. Sort of like a stationary but swirling vortex of energy or consciousness or something. Actually, that reminds me of that that great big container of swirling green liquid from the Prince of Darkness movie, which is, of course, if people know me or have heard me talk about it, that's one of my very favorite movies. It's probably like my top 10 favorite horror movies. Prince of Darkness, directed by John Carpenter. So I recommend anyone seeing that. But yeah, that's that kind of reminds me of Yog-Sothoth, I guess. Stationary, but always moving, constant, but always in a state of flux.
Right, and never masked a solid.
Right.
So I think that we as people can look to this great old one and see that us ourselves must remain fluid in that sense.
I agree. I definitely agree. I think there's that, and there's the nature of the void itself and how it's empty yet full of something at the same time. And it's those kind of contradictions that we're going for in the Cthulhu cults, and that Lovecraft's mythos was about. And I think those kind of contradictions and reconciling them are very important to anyone who wants to awaken or get a real handle on the fundamentals of reality and what we're dealing with. You know, look at the third side. It's also a very satanic point of view that LaVey headed up, and I think that's also crucial.
Right, absolutely. I think, hold on a second, let me actually gather my thoughts here. I think that it speaks a lot about what man actually is. Man, with all of these masks that we wear, is actually a very contradicting creature by nature.
Right.
And I think that part of awakening has to be understanding the essence of the animal that we actually are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you understand that, you know, we eat meat, we eat vegetables, we're constantly in contradiction. that we have this sense of searching. You know, we begin to realize that, you know, there's, we're always searching, but we never want to accept the answers we're given.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
And I think that the idea behind here is that, you know, we are a species of contradiction, and we create this wall of illusion that we like to call reality. I mean, how important is it really that, you know, Jane down the street says that your wife is fucking six other guys? You know, and in retrospect...
Well, yeah. I guess it's all relative, but yeah, I know what you're getting at.
Right. I mean, and in all reality, it doesn't really make much of a difference. We're here alone by ourselves, trying to reach out for something.
Right. Yeah, I think, yeah, you got to be a certain amount of, to be self-contained or have a certain amount of self-possession. You got to separate yourself from all that other stuff. But going back just a few seconds ago to what you were saying about being afraid of the truth, you know, wanting to know the truth, wanting to know things that are deeper, a deeper level of reality or understanding, and being afraid of what we find. I think that's also a central element to Lovecraft's mythos and his whole cosmology. And because there's every likelihood that whatever we find out will not be to our liking, that we're not the center of the universe, and mankind isn't the epitome of greatness and advanced civilization and goodness. You know, we're a very conflicted and dark and troubled and evil species that is doomed to an eternity of suffering unless we can do something about it. And not many people even want to face those facts. And until you do, you know, how can you help yourself until you face the reality? People are just in denial. And I can understand why they would be, because it's scary to realize that we are practically alone in the universe without friends in a hostile environment that, you know, that's disturbing and it sucks. But the old ones, I think, are a way out, and they're a branch for us to reach for and to hang on to and pull ourselves up from the pit of quicksand, if you will, that our lives are.
Right. I think one of the things that Lovecraft recognized was the fact that we are inherently evil. As he describes the old ones coming back, he actually he states that during this period in time, you would know this because of a certain condition that would begin to exist. Do you remember what that condition is? Well,
I'm sort of blanking.
It's the condition was that men would go out and murder, and they would do it in a laughing, kind of frolicking manner.
Right.
I don't actually have the exact text in front of me,
I know what you mean. The old ones would teach man new ways to kill and revel and to enjoy himself, and everything would flame in a holocaust of ecstasy and violence and sexual freedom. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that actually it starts off, though, as something along those lines, and then it states that as they came through, that the old ones would teach us new ways to do it.
Right. Yeah, that leads to speculation. Was Lovecraft talking about the modern world and modern society of the 21st century? Or was he talking something a bit more metaphorical or spiritual or symbolic?
Could it not be both?
Exactly. Or, or something that we're just, maybe something in the 22nd century that, you know, we have no, things are just going to accelerate and build up speed and get even wilder and crazier and more out of control. And then maybe man will find a way to rein himself in a bit, or to go even farther into new realms of experience. So I think it's all open territory, and that's one of the, also the great things about Lovecraft is his mythos is very interpretive, and people can make of it what they will.
Without going too far off of this, is there anything in particular that you wanted people to understand about Yog-Sothoth that...
of H.P. Lovecraft's blood-curdling tales of horror and the macabre, the introduction by Robert Bloch. And this is the very first Lovecraft book that I ever bought. It was around this time. It was actually, it was almost Halloween, and I was in a bookstore in New Mexico, I don't even know how long, like 20 years ago, and there was like a little horror book display of like scary stories and stuff. And I just picked this up and the pictures look cool, the descriptions of the stories on it interesting. And I started reading a little bit of it in the bookstore and I just kind of thought that there was something cool here. So I bought it and it's been in my possession ever since. But the first story I would recommend to people is The Call of Cthulhu. I'll just read a little one sentence blurb on the back of what that story is about. For this editor that compiled the stories. The first story in the infamous Cthulhu mythos, a creature spawned in the stars brings a menace of unimaginable evil to threaten all mankind. And I guess the second story I would recommend to people is probably the Dunwich Horror, which also deals a lot with Yog-Sothoth. And the little one-sentence description on the back of this book is, an evil man's desire to perform an unspeakable ritual leads him in search of the fabled text of the Necronomicon. And I think the Necronomicon, you know, it features widely in all of the Lovecraft stories. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And Yog-Sothoth is definitely a part of the mythos and a part of the Necronomicon. There is one other thing from the Dunwich Horror. And that is the idea of an old one impregnating a woman or some sort of vessel, kind of like the Immaculate Birth of Jesus Christ.
Right, or the, thousand other stories that are similar to that?
Right, exactly. There's tons of myths and legends and religious mythologies use that. The gods came down at one point or entered this reality and spawned with females and created sort of either a master race or some sort of different hybrid creature or, I like to believe that the old ones had a direct effect on human evolution from when we diverged from ape-like men and, Neanderthals and things like that.
It's, that belief is actually, it's a very ancient belief. Stemming back to the world's first known religion of Sumeria, actually. the Sumerians, their gods were very similar to the old ones in the aspect that they were from outer space, and that they came here and they inherently blessed us with science and math and the ability to think outside of normal, thought patterns in the animal kingdom at that time.
Right. Yeah, and kind of like other examples like Prometheus and who brought fire, and all sorts of biblical stories, the whole Sumerian thing. I think that's very interesting because it ties in with Simon, Necronomicon, as well as things like the Ghostbusters movie, the first one.
Right.
Oh my God, I watched that when I was, 10 or something? And I loved it, not only because it was funny and cool and, about the paranormal, but it really talks about some heavy, old stuff. I watched it again, a couple months ago. I couldn't believe, how Lovecraftian the Ghostbusters movie was. I was just like, Jesus Christ, this is, almost like a modern Lovecraft tale. And it was awesome. Even the real Ghostbusters cartoon had two or three episodes that directly tied in and referenced H.P. Lovecraft and the Cthulhu mythos.
Well, that's even been tied into Scooby-Doo, man, so...
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, Lovecraft's influence is,
widespread.
Exactly. I was going to say, gigantic or something. But, yeah, exactly. It's widespread. It's fucking everywhere. I'm getting, an echo on my phone. I don't know if anyone else can hear it, but I guess it's neither here nor there, but I'm thinking about it in my head. Anyway, Lovecraft is everywhere, and hopefully he's just going to get bigger because he's got a lot of profound things to say, and he's influenced me and influenced a ton of other artists and writers and just creators in general and thinkers and philosophers. So there's no limit to what can be forged from Lovecraft's imagination.
Absolutely not. We're actually we're already inside of our last 15 minutes, the section that we usually like to dub as the undiluted truth. But
so this is the portion of the show when we rip on our listeners for not calling in.
Pretty much. You guys have got 12 minutes to call and tell us what idiots we are. It's 347-989-1371. If you do call and tell us we're idiots, just be prepared to hear that the case is actually the opposite.
Our rebuttal is, no, we're not. You're an idiot.
Exactly. Yeah. This show has gone great for us. With over almost 500 listens off of our first three episodes.
We got strippers calling us all the time, wanting to fuck our brains out because we're hosting the show, which is obviously legendary and the best thing ever. It's been good for us.
Yeah, no, I think it's excellent in the fact that there are a lot of people that are downloading and listening to the archive, and I want to encourage them to continue to do that, but it's only going to get better, and I want people to realize that it's only going to get better if you can call in and enrich it and give us, some different perspective.
Exactly. It's the whole contribution thing that we talked about a little bit earlier. You get out what you put in. And if you're not putting much in, then obviously you're not going to get quite as much out as you would have. I mean, it's cool to just, sit back and listen and be entertained and maybe hopefully learn something. But the whole interactive exchange, that's important, not only for the use. The use is great, and it's a vehicle for us, like Yog-Sothoth. But the real powerhouse, I think, is not only the Cthulhu cult, but our whole community, the whole Left-Hand Path community, Lovecraft freaks and Satanists and dark Wiccans or, you know, demonologists or just occultists or black magicians or fourth wave practitioners, whoever the fuck. It's important to keep lines of communication open and keep exchanging things, keep, you know, keep trying to help each other out, and I don't know, keep hope alive.
I'm actually going to, there are a lot of people out there that I've seen that claim that they're making these huge contributions to the left-hand path. But I never really see the contribution itself surface. And so I'm going to actually begin the process of sort of calling them out. One of the first people that I'm going to invite them to call in to next week's show or another show in the future, whenever they can do it. After this is all done tonight, I'll probably record a video and put it on YouTube. And I'm gonna call Jason King out. I want him to call into the show. I want him to share his benevolent knowledge with us. You know, we can't grow as left hand path practitioners. That term sounds so cheesy to me, but we can't grow without the communication and exchange.
Right, exchange of ideas and. Exchange of like time and energy. If you guys help us, then we'll help you. You know, we'll let you pimp whatever you're talking about or whatever it is you're doing. You know, if you have a website or if you have a project you're working on, you know, you can talk about that. You can just give us like the link and tell listeners all about it. You know, if you help us, we help you, and that's...
I'll even go as far as to construct a commercial to play during the show.
Right. Yeah, not for every person that calls in and says, hey, you guys are cool, I have a question. But, you know...
No, contributors.
If someone wants to, like, get a hold of us ahead of time and, like, really, you know, put, like, 5 or 10 minutes of their life or their Saturday, like, into the show to try to make it better... then, yeah, we'll bend over backwards to help that person out and, yeah, create a commercial or, advertise some of their shit, you know, through all of our channels, which are pretty extensive. One person or group helping out another. That's what it's all about, you know. You
absolutely.
You don't always have to be an asshole and an egoist and, all for yourself. And I hope people recognize that and recognize that we're not just trying to be dicks and or think that we're so great and not give people stuff in return, because we're trying to give people value. That's what we're trying to do, and we hope that people do value what we do, and they'll give us value in return.
I think that's very well stated. Hey, Regan. That's my son, who's supposed to be taking a nap right now. He's going to get into big trouble. He'll hopefully benefit from all of this, and that's really what's in it for me. Is when everything's all said and done, I hope that I can hand him a school of free thinking that was not handed to me.
Right. Yeah, making the world a better place. That's all about.
Or at least a more self-serving place.
Yes.
Hang on. My computer's acting a fool, so I don't even know how much time we have left at this point.
Probably not much time left, I would think. We're probably down to our last minute or two, or maybe less than a minute. I don't even know. Unfortunately, I'm in my car... in a parking lot, and I don't have, like, a clock on me except the phone I'm holding.
Which you're holding.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have no idea what the hell he just did. There we go.
Oh, so what are we going to talk about next show? Do we even know?
Actually, I have been giving some consideration to it. I hadn't actually come up with an exact I hadn't actually come up with an exact decision as to which one. I thought either we could go directly for the meat and potatoes of Cthulhu himself, or maybe Azoth.
Right. Or we could do Nihilophicus. That would be cool also.
Okay, so since you're the brilliant cult leader, how about we'll let you pick which one you want to do?
How about Nihilophicus? Because I just mentioned it, and now I've got it in my head.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
To him, I think there's a lot of material. A lot of the stuff I draw on is fantastic. Call of Cthulhu role-playing game scenario book, Masks of Nyarlathotep. And I know what people are thinking, like, well, that's a role-playing game aid, and that's nothing to do with, you know, the occult or actual Lovecraft stuff. But you know, it all goes hand in hand. You know, it came from someone's imagination that was deeply immersed in the mythos. And, you know, what more do you want? I mean, it's source material just like Lovecraft's own stories are. So we'll probably draw on that. Lovecraft stories themselves, other writers, and, yeah, a whole host of different sources.
Okay, so there you guys have it. That's next week's subject. We'll try to make it a little more. What's that?
Interactive.
Interactive, yeah. I'm gonna throw that video up, and I'm gonna, you know, I'll make it a reply to one of his videos so that he's, you know, his attention is brought directly to it. I have the advantage of not being very well known, so you know, he's not really going to know what to expect or what he's coming into. So that might help in our case.
Yeah, Jason King is kind of a YouTube celebrity, especially in the satanic crowd. So yeah, it would be great to have him on the show sometime. Maybe
absolutely.
On that.
Now we got about 2 minutes left, so I want to thank you, Venger. You've become an inspiration for me lately, and have led me to looking into something that's thought as fiction as the possibility of it actually being a reality.
Well, thank you. That's all a guru such as myself, or a high priest, or whatever I am. That's all someone can ask. To just be, you know, appreciated by people and other people wanting to do some work and to do some self-examination and some exploring. And that's kind of why I do this, is to hopefully help people out and stir people up and get people interested in the things that I am. And to create change. So, yeah, that's what I do. And that's what the Cthulhu cult is all about, creating change. So I'm very flattered. And, yeah, I think co-hosting the show is a great step in the right direction. Just reaching out to as many people as we can. I think that's cool, and that's helpful. So, yeah, I want to thank you because you're the man that knows all about this radio stuff. Kind of just provide my input, my voice, and the whole engineering stuff that's the beast that, you know, he's doing, and you know, I can probably find out how to email or text someone, but he has all the mechanical know-how and all the experience with radio, so that's cool. So I wouldn't be here without him.
Well, thank you very much. I think we both want to thank all the fucks that are going to archive this and listen to it afterwards. Y'all could have.
Thank you.
And that's about all the time we have. So we're out of here, man.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Here goes the old outro.
Thank you for listening to the news. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. The news does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.